you have an eight-step list.
You know, I got my guys, and we do this thing like y'all, and we got a big fire pit, and they do a big spiritual bonfire. You got a fire out here. If you're here doing a fifth step, and you're thinking, God, I'm glad with that, I'm going to burn this thing. Don't do it. You're burning up some really cool information, because what you're going to do is you're going to transcribe that thing. This was devised by Joe and Charlie. This is a cool little tool. Use it if you will. Do it the way you want, but this is cool. What you do is you take these people, places, and institutions that you're willing. What does a step say? Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Became willing to make amends. These are the people that are the easy ones, the ones that are convenient. Mom. Best friend. You're pretty sure these are going to go pretty good. So you list all these people you're willing to make amends to now. Then these guys are the later guys. These are like, say for instance, let's just say for instance the IRS, because you owe them money and you don't want to raise your hand yet because you're not prepared. Because you're going to make amends. You're not going to call the IRS and say, by the way, I'm sorry I hadn't paid you anything in 15 years. These are the guys you're going to talk to later. There could be a number of reasons why they fall within this category. Then you got these guys over here. You're just not sure. But so you're going to put them down here anyway. These are the maybes. And y'all know who these are. There's a bunch of hers in that column. Never. Here's what happens. This is a trick. And I'm going to give it up. You go to mom and your best friend, and you make direct amends. Direct amends is this. You look them in the eye, and you say, I'm sorry I stole the cash out of your purse. You pay it back, $100, whatever it was, and I'll never do that again. To make an amends, and we'll cover this tomorrow, is to change by adding to or taking away. But you make these amends in the now column and you get them done and they go pretty good. So you're thinking, or what you've got is a taste of the process and they go pretty good. And you go, wow, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So you complete these guys. Everything moves over a column. You got your feet wet. So the laters become nows. The maybes become laters. And the nevers become maybes. You with me? It's a pretty cool process. I don't know about your amends process. I don't know about your history. I've been a bad guy. I've been a real bad guy. And when I started this process, the guy that taught me how to cook freebase down in Jacksonville, Florida, we were in broadcast together, he had come to Atlanta. And he's done this, kicking me out of his house while I'm crawling around on his floor. And I went into his office at a TV station where we'd both worked and I'd gotten fired from for guess what. And I went in and I sat down because I needed to make amends. I'd stolen from this guy and I'd done a lot of horrible things to him. I threatened his life at the tail end of my run, September of 87. I called him up and told him I'd kill him and I meant it. I went in his office and I said, oh, dude, my life has changed. I'm here to do this process. He said, get the hell out of here. And he got up from behind his desk and chased me out the studio. Now, this guy was doing the same stuff I was doing, only I was destructive, man. I was burning that wide, deep, flaming path through my life and theirs. And as time, because he knew me. He knew what I was capable of. He'd known me for years in Jacksonville and up here. And as the years passed, he watched me from afar through other people. And he kept tabs on me. And what's happened, Sheldon has let me into his life over the last 10 years. I'm a flooring contractor back in Atlanta. I'm a little flooring business. I've gone into Sheldon's house with a key to let myself in and out and to do projects in his home where his belongings are. He trusts me. But that didn't happen overnight. He didn't trust me. He threw me out of his office. So it's attraction rather than promotion. He watched the walk, and he invited me back in his life. And today, that relationship is unshakable. And I've had other I went to a guy that I owed some money to. And he says, man, he says, keep your money. He says, I'm so grateful. Me and so many other people are so grateful you're not behaving that way anymore. So I've had, that's the bad result, or the not so good result. And I've had great results where people welcomed me. And I disclosed what my problem was, thinking they didn't know and everybody knew all along. Eighth step, you made a list of all the people you've harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. It doesn't say that you made amends. It says you became willing to. Any questions on this? Where are we at? Y'all go get a good night's rest. I'll see you in here in about 8 o'clock in the morning. Thank y'all. Good morning, y'all. As we opened up our sessions on Friday, we told you that we have the opportunity and the privilege of doing this all over the place. And it never fails. This is the morning that we dread. Because what's happened at this vantage point is your faces, your emotions, and the memory of this weekend goes with us. It's really difficult to leave. Never fails. And this weekend is no different. My name is Larry Scott, and I'm an alcoholic.
Larry.
And I'm free this morning. I'm going to start this thing out this morning with a little piece that's some dialogue from the movie My Name is Bill W. And if you saw the movie, there's a scene where it's the living room. Bill's just come down from another drunk. Lois comes home from work, sees him peering out the window. Hanging up her coat, she walks in the room and asks, does it have anything to do with me? You're drinking. No, it's not you, it's me. Why? Why do you do it to yourself? I've been standing here all afternoon asking myself the same question. I look out the window and watch the normal people walking by. And it's funny. I don't think I've ever felt normal, not really normal, all my life. I mean, like other people. I feel different somehow. I don't really measure up. Ever since I can remember, I've had this feeling deep down inside my gut, scared. I see people laughing with ease and with each other. I'm on the outside looking in. I'm afraid that I won't be accepted. And then overseas, I found that a few drinks, makes me feel comfortable, like I always want to feel. Gives me courage to be with people, to do things, to dream. The money, the respect, the success. It was all good for a while, but it never seems enough. I always want doubles of everything to make me feel alive, worthwhile inside. But then it all began to slip away. I feel cheated, angry, always full of fear. So I drink more. And it makes me feel okay for a while. I convince my things that things will turn around tomorrow. Soon that I'll make it all up to you. But it only gets worse. I keep promising you, others, myself. That's it. And I think I mean it. But the guilt and depression. I can't look in the mirror or at you, especially at you. I've stopped believing in everything, people, God, myself. I know it sounds insane, Lois, but in spite of all this, what I want right now more than anything else is another drink.
We ended last night's session embarking on step 8, which is where we made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Brings us into page 76, somewhere near the bottom.
My name is Christian Proctor. I'm an alcoholic. Third paragraph down, right in the middle of the paragraph, it says, "Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, prayer, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol." You know, Earl Hightower talks about this thing, you know, how free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? You know, it's, how free do you want to be? Do you want a little bitty baby buzz? Or do you want a big buzz? You know, that's the thing, man. This is where a lot of people peter out. They get a list, and they haven't had a drink in a minute. They haven't really wanted a drink in a minute. And they peter out. Book says, probably there's still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded as a fanatic or a religious bore? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But this man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. They are going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Demonstration of goodwill is when you walk in the door with money, leading with money.
Yeah, Bill, you're going to see so many examples, so much of Bill Wilson's story and his experience working these steps and then going out and dragging drunks off bar stools and trying to shove the Bible in their butt and trying to hammer them with this spiritual experience that he had. Can't do it, you know? We don't carry the drunk. We carry the message. And Domino's delivers. If my intention to go out and to carry this message is that you receive it, can't do it. The book's going to tell us a little later, we're sure to find somebody who will accept with eagerness what you offer. Not everybody in this room really cares about what we've shared up here this weekend. But there's a couple people in this room who needed to hear it more than anything else. We're not really sure who those people are, but they're going to turn around and they're going to take that enthusiasm, and hopefully we can fan those flames and continue this kind of work, because there's alcoholics dying every day around us who may never know the truth. So it says, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we're willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. Though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him. When did that happen? Wait a minute. I started praying for him in a fourth step. I started praying that that poor SOB gets all the love, comfort, and understanding that I want for myself. I view them as a sick friend. Wow. I show them, ask God to help me show them patience, tolerance, and pity that I would cheerfully grant to a sick friend. God's starting a mighty work in my life when I start a fourth step. Please do not misunderstand. Writing a fourth step is important, but the healing does not come in the writing. The healing comes in the praying. Here, in a ninth step, I'm walking out to somebody I hated, and guess what? My attitude towards him has suddenly changed. Wow. I mean, it says I may not still be too keen about admitting my faults. Nevertheless, with a person I dislike, I take the bit in the teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend. but I find it is much more beneficial to me. I go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing my former ill feeling and expressing my regret.
And you don't have to go in there and reopen that can of worms and talk about all the good, the bad, and the ugly. We both parties knows what that is. And kind of an overview of this section of the book, this thing's going to go through a whole bunch of what ifs and maybes. And we're not going to go there because most situations are different. And all they're doing is giving you some high points on some possible scenarios. And you know what all those could be. And there's no sense in covering those. But in a general way, we're going to cover some of that here this morning.
Most importantly, the big book does not tell us what we're supposed to say. It tells us how we're supposed to say it. It doesn't give us guidelines on how we're supposed to walk in there and lay it all down on the table and explain it this, 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 and this. It tells us what our attitude and outlook is supposed to be, what our prayer life is supposed to be. It gives us great suggestions on how I'm walking in there with the creator of the universe. No longer am I running the show. And it's so important, and we touch on that, helpful and forgiving spirit. Wow. And I don't tell my sponsees what they're supposed to do. I quit playing God when I made my third step decision. Doesn't mean I don't try to wrestle the reins back, but I don't know what God's got planned for my sponsees. So when they walk in, I suggested them helpful and forgiving spirit and a couple other suggestions in here as far as attitudes and outlooks. Book suggests, under no condition do I criticize such a person or argue. I simply tell them that I will never get over drinking until I have done my utmost to straighten out the past. I am there to sweep off my side of the street, realizing nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until I do so, never trying to tell them what they should do. Their faults are not discussed.
Period.
I stick to my own. If my manner is calm, frank, and open, I'll be gratified with the results.
This little nine-step promise.
Says nine cases out of... All right. Skip down another paragraph. This is something I'm sure nobody in here can relate to. It says most alcoholics owe money.
That doesn't exist out here, does it?
Southeast is notorious, especially around Atlanta. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we're trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyways, whether we think so or not. Nor am I afraid of disclosing my alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will... sometimes surprises. Arranging the best deal I can, I let these people know that I'm sorry. My drinking's made me slow to pay. I must lose my fear of creditors no matter how far I have to go, for I am liable to drink if I am afraid to face them.
There's a pretty much a death threat right there. Now, this arranging the best deal you can, that's an important thing. Let's say you owe Sears a piece of money. You haven't paid them in a long time. When you approach those people, it's a good idea, strong suggestion, that you have a plan in mind. I owe you $1,000. Here's $75, and I wanted to see if I could work a deal with you where I could give you $25 a month until the balance is paid off, including interest and late fees. Will that work for you? You're arranging the best deal you can. You don't call up and say, you know what, I just got out of the spin dry and the jitter joint, and I'm not working. Sorry I haven't paid you. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. You call them up with a little piece of money and make an arrangement to pay them their money. It's their money that you're paying back.
All right, we're going to skip over top of 79. Just going to go into another prayer. That first full paragraph, starting out with although, we're going to skip to the third line where it says, reminding ourselves we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, prayer. I ask that I be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I sponsor a guy back home named Jacob. Jacob, sitting down in a Starbucks parking lot, as we're drinking coffee, he starts to slink down in his chair. You know the look. I look over my shoulder, and there's a Cobb County Cruiser coming up right behind him. And I looked at him, and I said, you got warrants, don't you? And he said, yep. I said, what are you going to do when you're driving home from work one night and you see blues in your rear view? What are you going to do? Are you going to punch it? Because chances are he's not looking for you. But is that fear going to tell you to run? Is that fear going to command what you do? And he goes, yeah. I said, how afraid do you want to be? So he arranged the best deal he could, got his lawyer to meet him down at the Rice Street, which is the Atlanta Fulton County Jail. Not a real pleasant place to be. Turned out it was going to be 3 hours. He was going to be bailed out, and he was going to just wait until his trial. That was his plan. 3 weeks later, he's feeling the pinch. Guess what he's doing while he's sitting behind the wall? He's 12-stepping, guys. God had other plans for Jacob. Jacob went in front of the judge. He was going to give him 28 years. He had intent to distribute. He had possession. And it was his second or third charge on both of those things. They're going to slap him. And they're going to put him down for a while. The judge looked at him. Guess who didn't show up? His lawyer. But guess who did? God. Gave him 90 days in the county doing a little farm work. He called me as he got out. Went and saw me speak that night. And tears of joy running down his face because he knew he's supposed to be buried for 28 years. He didn't get 28 years. He got 90-day slap on the wrist. Just this past year, he called me one morning and left me a long, detailed voicemail. I don't have to report to anybody this morning. There's nobody looking for me. I'm free. I'm not loose. I'm free.
There you go.
And there's a big difference. Being out on bond is nice, but not having any paper on you, not having anybody looking for you, and not having to report to no one. Free. Now, when he told his halfway house that he was living in, that this is what my sponsor and I have come up with, they thought, dude, that's a bad idea, man. I wouldn't turn myself in for nothing. The book says we're reminding ourselves we've gone to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. He was given the strength and the direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. His daughter will not know her father behind bars. Living one day at a time in this program, he's never going to have to pick up a drink, and she'll never have to see him high or drunk again. That's a gift right there.
We're going to flip over to page 83. Second paragraph, the spiritual life.
There's prayers throughout this. Two lines up from where we're starting right now is another prayer. Please don't ever misunderstand the intention of the 12 steps. They are designed to bring about a spiritual experience. I get caught up sometimes thinking that what I read out of this book is going to fix me. No, it won't. That what I do in a meeting will fix me. No, it won't. This book is all about God. It's all about God. It's all about God. It goes on to say in that next paragraph, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless our family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we not ought to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. My family will change in time. My behavior will convince them more than my words. I have to remember, 10 or 20 years of drunkenness will make a skeptic out of anyone. Then it says, there may be some wrongs I can never fully right. I don't worry about them if I can honestly say to myself that I would write them if I could. Some people cannot be seen. I send them an honest letter.
I've got a sister-in-law back in Atlanta, and I could be in the same room with her, but she wouldn't let me talk to her. And what I did in that situation, I don't condone, but I carried the resentment and the amends way, 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 way past its due date. And I finally wrote the letter. I called my sponsor and I said, I'm ready. Because I wanted these amends to go down on my terms. I wanted to see her. I wanted her to invite me over for chicken, you know, since I'd been such a stand-up guy. And he said, write the letter. So I wrote the letter, called him back. I read the letter. He said, mail it. Here's the key. When I opened the box, I put the letter in and pulled up the flag. As soon as I pulled up the flag, I was free. And here's why. I didn't expect anything to come back from that. I didn't expect her to say, my God, Larry, you're such a great guy. We got chicken and salad this Sunday. Come on over. Never happened. Never expected it. I don't know what happened with her getting that letter. But what happened with this alcoholic is I got free. Mm. She doesn't rent any space with me anymore. Yeah. My side of the street swept off. I'm good.
Yeah. Larry touched on it. I mean, it's so vital. I can't tell you how many phone calls I field from one of my guys going, they wouldn't accept my amends.
So?
What does the book say? It shouldn't matter. We're there to sweep off our side of the street. Whether they accept it or not is none of your business. Did you mean it when you said it?
Well, yeah.
Then you made your amends. You know, and I got a guy I sponsored, went back to South Carolina to make amends to two ex-girlfriends. They were in the now column. They were going to be easy ones, right? First door he knocks on, she opens it up, smiles, and starts crying. It's just, oh, Craig. Just throws her arms around him. Oh, of course I forgive you. He calls me after he leaves. He goes, that went great. I'm going to go hit the other one now. He's walking in all puffed out, knocks on that door. Little different response on this one. She cussed him for a dog and told him all up and down how he had hurt her, how he inflicted himself upon her, how her life had not been the same since he ran through her life. He called me on the way home saying, that didn't go so good. And I said, hold on, that went great. You have no mistakes in your head as to whether or not you hurt her. You felt the pain of that. And the best example I have in my own experience, as I sat down to make amends to my mom for the first time, as I slid a little stack of money across, she just looked at it, looked at me, and pushed it back. And she says, you have no idea. Keep your damn money. Can you give me those 6 months back that I didn't know if you were alive or dead? Can you give me those 6 months of sleepless nights, knowing that you were hurting, knowing that you were dying, and not sure if there was a hospital going to call and ask me to come down and report and to identify a dead body? Waiting on sheriff's deputies to come and knock on my door saying, we have your son. Can you give me those months back? You robbed me of 6 months of my life. How dare you? Now, my relationship with her as a result of doing the 12 steps is a lot better today. But that just shows you the arrogance. I thought a little piece of money was going to buy some peace of mind, and it didn't. That's the reason I'm such a big proponent of face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball amends. You know, today my mom, they gave me a key to their house. They let me come over and do yard work. She lets me come over and do yard work for her. That trust that I lost, she gave it back. And it's most dramatic. My mom carried a purse with her everywhere. For 15 years, after I started stealing from her purse, she carried it everywhere. I thought she was like losing it one day when I came home and the purse was on the table and she wasn't in the room. Mom? You feeling okay? I'm thinking something's going on. I said, your purse is on the table and you're in the other room. She goes, oh, I trust you. Wow. If you had told me that all I could ever feel in this program was that I wouldn't have to drink again, I would have taken it at that face value. But if you had told me I would get my self-respect back, that I would get my dignity back, that I would get trust with people I know, love, and respect back, that I would get those intangibles, we never put value on them until we lost them, and then to get them back. The car, the job, and the girl, those are easy to get back. Self-respect and dignity. Things that I gave them away with a drink, and I got them back as a result of doing this work with God in my life. Oh, man. It says there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. Here's how my directions for doing a ninth step. I should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping.
Let's talk about servile. Servile. If you got one of these little dictionaries, they're handy in this case. Servile, slave-like in attitude, submissive, feeling less than, subservient. And then there's this scraping deal, which we're all really familiar with. Irritating, harsh, quarrelsome, aggravating.
Yeah, if I walk in to drop off $50 that I owe a guy and I throw it on his desk saying, here's your damn money, that's scraping.
And you don't walk in looking at your shoes all beat down like a dog either.
Look at them in the eyes.
Because as God's people, we stand on our feet. That's what this book says.
And somebody suggested to me that if I'm continuing to make amends to somebody that I've made amends to, I didn't make the amends.
Yep.
All I am is walking on eggshells feeling guilty and remorseful. And if I made it, them accepting it is a condition. I'm putting a condition on the amends. I'm still playing God. They don't accept it. That's their side of the street. The
book says, as God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And here's this document that we hear in all these meetings. Let's break it down so we understand what they're really saying in these meetings. You have you've made this list, and you've gone out and you've made direct amends to people. Direct is, I'm looking you in the eye, and I'm righting the wrong that I did to you. And I'm doing it so that I can see how you accept that amends. It's important. Emails, phones, letters, you can't see what's really happening there. I can cover up a whole bunch of stuff in an email. But it says, if you are painstaking about this phase of your development, you're going to be amazed before you're halfway through with this process. You are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. How cool is that? You're not going to regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. Because you never know when your past is going to give you or that new guy a hand. It says that you're going to comprehend the word serenity. It doesn't say you're going to know it. You're going to comprehend it. You're going to begin to get a sense of what that is. And you're going to know peace. God, remember that gut boiling and rolling and you're nervous and you're just all tied up in knots? That ain't peace. It says you're going to know peace. And then it says no matter how far down the scale you've gone, you're going to see how your experience is going to help that new guy that's coming. Because he's coming. God's got a way of handpicking these dudes and popping them in our life that are just like us. And you can say, I did that, I thought that, I felt that. You with me? That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish thing. After all, isn't our goal to become selfless and gain interest in our fellows? Self-seeking will slip away. I'll do that for you, but what's in it for me? I never did anything without a hook in it. The hook goes away. Our whole attitude, this is the attitude we've been talking about, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people, one in itself. I'm not scared of people anymore. I'm really good at, with walking up and being with other folks, in or out of this program. Second part of that is that we're going to lose fear of economic insecurity. That one confused me for a lot of years. About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, all the walls come crumbling down. And I'm not going to tell you that part of my story because it's just not that important. But economically, things were done. And it was dead of the winter. We got cold winters back home. We actually had some of this stuff last weekend, but they came and cut my gas off. She had left, and I didn't see any relief on the horizon. I was living in the middle of economic insecurity. Here's the key. I had no fear of it. My prayer partner here, we hung on to each other, and I was very honest with him and my sponsor and those about me where I was, but I knew God was coming. Because you told me he was. You told me you did. You said, Larry, you did the work. Do you have faith? Yeah. Well, if you got faith, not a belief or a hope or a hunch, but a faith, God's coming. It's just when I'm sitting there freezing my butt off, I'm thinking, I sure wish he wore a wristwatch and get his butt on over here because I'm ready. I'm ready for some gas. But I knew God was coming, and I knew he was going to show up, and he has every time. He didn't look at his watch 2 years ago and say, you know what, I brought this jerk along for 19 years and I think I'm just going to drop him on his butt today. It's not the way God works, man. I know he's coming. I'm just not certain when because he doesn't synchronize his watch with mine. So I lost fear of economic insecurity. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Things that used to just completely get us all sideways, makes sense now. We know how to handle those things. We'll suddenly realize that it's God that's doing for us what we weren't doing for ourselves. And then the first 100 asked, are these extravagant promises? And they say, no, we think not, because they're being fulfilled among us, the first 100. And they're being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, if you really want to do the work, and sometimes slowly, if you're kind of dragging your feet. Goes on to say, but they will always materialize if we work for them. That's the end of step 9. Anybody got any questions on this?
I know Larry didn't mean this when but the inflection could possibly be interpreted that the faster you do the steps, the faster you're going to get to the finish line. And I sponsor a number of guys who have done the work, and they're still going through hard times. The apartment that they live in, or the house they live in, or the car they drive, or the woman they're married to, is not a reflection of God's love for them. The absence of those things is not a reflection of God's love for them. They've got what the book promises. Freedom from alcohol. They're no longer a slave to it. They have recovered. But whether or not... I live in an apartment. Larry lives in a house. Does God love me any less that I live in an apartment? Have I worked the steps any slower? Because, no. We get caught up sometimes in the stuff that means nothing because we threw it away easily, and the things that are the intangibles, which are the most important, which are what these promises talk about. The things in this, in these intangibles right here have nothing to do with material possessions. Because I've had a guy who's working through a tough time right now, and he wants to have that prosperity. And I got to remember, God is not in the prosperity business. And I have another guy who talks about wanting that woman. I said, God ain't a pimp. You know? The absence of a woman or the absence of a career or the absence of this is not the absence of God. Please don't interpret it that way. And I'm probably preaching to the choir here, and I apologize if I get on. But sometimes we get caught up in the stuff and comparing our insides against other people's outsides. And at 7 years of sobriety, I do it. And I can't forget that the book does not promise me stuff. The book promises me a quality of life, a peace of mind, a content heart, and a rested soul.
This brings us to step 10, and it's real important that we have this little conversation with you. Fellowship will tell you that 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. Why would you want to maintain where you're at? The book doesn't tell you these are maintenance steps. The book says, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously, that's forcefully and energetically, began this way of life as we cleaned up the past. And then it says, promise, we have entered the world of the Spirit. Here's your next function, to grow. Doesn't say our next function is to maintain. 10, 11, 12 are growth steps. Continue to take personal inventory. It says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve. That's not maintain. You with us here?
How many people are planning on staying in this room for the rest of their life? This particular room at St. Benedict's Lodge. All right, that's what I thought. We have entered the world of the Spirit. We don't stay in the world of the Spirit. We enter it. Guess what takes us out? Resentment, fear, misconduct, dishonesty, inconsideration, selfishness, self-seeking. That takes us out of the realm of the Spirit. We're doing this. This is the realm of the Spirit. We just kind of keep going over and above it, in and out of it, in and out of it. And the book tells me we're never going to be completely in it. We won't. God doesn't remove it. We're not washed white as snow. We're alcoholic. We have a program that keeps us, if we practice it, in a manner of living which allows us to re-enter the world of the Spirit and to stay as close as possible to it. But I'm going to step outside of it. I watch him step outside of it on a regular basis. We do that because that's what we do. You know? But the thing is about the program is it's a set of principles, spiritual in nature. But the whole point of this is so that I can come back to the realm of the Spirit. You know? And then I'm going to find another thing that's going to take me back out, and then it's going to be nudged back in. But a lot of people have said there, well, I'm in the realm of the spirit now. And I was like, no, you just entered it. You can stay as long as you not act human, but you're going to enter out, enter in, enter, exit out, enter in. And it's such a neat thing because that helped me a lot because I'm sitting there under the delusion that I'm just God's favorite kid. Just for the record, it's Kip Collins, and he'll tell you that he's God's favorite kid. But I have that delusion that I'm going to just completely be cool with God every time. Man, sometimes I'm not cool with God. Sometimes I'm mad with God. Sometimes I want nothing to do with God. You know, we paint this very pious and like high, you know, platform that we're supposed to achieve to be. The book tells me I'm never going to reach it. I continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's the reason I do this. It suggests that we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It gives us a time frame. It's not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Step four.
When these crop up.
Because they're going to.
I ask God prayer at once to remove them.
Step six and seven.
I discuss them with someone immediately.
Step five.
And I make amends quickly.
Step eight and nine.
Especially if I've harmed anyone. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help.
Step 12.
Now, my first sponsor gave me the best example of this. As I walked right by him in the 8111 parking lot, after I talked to him twice that day on the phone, I walked by him, finished my cigarette, went into the meeting. Somebody asked if they had something they needed to talk about. I raised my hand and I dumped. He pulled me aside afterwards. He goes, I walk up to you and I shoot you in the foot. Are you going to wait until an 8 o'clock meeting to go and get it fixed? I said, no. He goes, why did you call me twice today and this never came up once? No. But you were sitting on it. Yeah. How come you didn't pull me aside in the parking lot? I don't know. He goes, why are you doing that? Step 10 is at once, immediately. When this happened, it's a walking around deal. I want to sit on it. I don't sit on emotional pain well. You can kick my ass. I can take an ass whooping, but please don't hurt my feelings. Please don't scare me. Please don't rub me the wrong way. What happens? I continue to watch. What? Resentment, dishonesty, fear. I look for these things, man. At once,
Christian,
ask God to remove
Christian
them.
Christian just made a point. A lot of people will tell you that they have a nighttime inventory that they do. I write a 10-step inventory every night. If you do that, would you please show me where that's at in the book? 10 steps of walking around prayer, guys. It's a walking around step. 10th step is a walking around step. That's right here, right now, right where we're at. And follow us along as we go through this. There ain't nothing about writing nothing at night in this 10th step. It ain't there. That's a fellowship myth.
And then the book says something that really, if you look at it in depth, is a very, very high and mighty thing to reach for. It says love and tolerance of others is our code. Love is easy. Every major religion preaches love. Tolerance is the hard one. Even the people I cannot stand in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to tolerate them. I have to tolerate my future mother-in-law. I have to tolerate a lot of my fiance's relatives. I have to tolerate people I cannot stand. Loving them is easy. Oh, they're one of God's kids. I love them. But when they're being a complete jerk around me, I tolerate them. And I do as good as I can. And sometimes I grit my teeth. And sometimes I bite my tongue. And sometimes I call Larry up and I'm like, you wouldn't believe what that sorry SOB did. But I tolerate as best I can. And you'll notice, and I'm sure the people in this room have had that experience, those people who used to just infuriate you, you may not feel warm and fuzzy around them, but you find yourself very tolerant of them now. They're just another one of God's kids. I pray for them all the time. You know.
Next promise coming up, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Remember, you used to fight alcohol? I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink today. Starting tomorrow, I'm not going to drink today. You know that deal? Because why, Christian?
It says, for this time, sanity will have returned. That second step proposition, came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. sounded great when I made the decision in step three to fulfill that objective of step two. Came to believe as a process. So I'm believing, yeah, sure. Yeah, got power greater than me can restore me to sanity. Can't remember what sane is, but that sounds right. So I do that third step decision, make a four step inventory, confess it in five, ask God in six and seven, make a list, make amends, start practicing 10. Guess what? Sanity has returned. Sane people do not drink. Sane people do not take poison to kill themselves. Sanity will have returned. It doesn't say manageability, though. Manageability never comes back.
What we're reading right here, gentlemen, are the 10th step promises.
We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame.
And that's not a direction. That's a promise. If you're tempted, you will recoil from it because you already know where it's going to take you.
Yeah.
You already know the end of that story.
We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part.
Wow. Where'd it come from?
It just comes. That's the miracle of it.
It's the miracle of it. Can't be explained.
We did the
work and it showed up.
Yeah. You can usually see this in a first year chip. And it was my experience. My first year chip, man, I spoke for about 5 minutes. I'm telling people how I did it and I was busy and I was doing this. Second year chip was a little different. Second year chip, the full realization that I did very little and God did a whole lot. First year, my attitude was I was busy. Second year was
God was busy.
God was real busy. The most dramatic I've ever seen is a guy, Scott. He was a low bottom drunk dumpster diver. And he first came in, and Larry and I remember this guy. He came in and he was rough. I mean, hair. He looked like the mad scientist. He had his hair all out like this, and he was unshaven, full beard, and he just met. In his first year, he didn't have to say anything. He just literally went like this. And he sat back down. And for those who remembered him, he couldn't keep his hand from shaking for 6 months.
Yipping, man.
Bad drunk. I mean, his decaf coffee, he'd be trying to bring it up, and it'd fly behind him. I mean, you had to wear a splash guard around him because he was yipping coffee. But this guy, that spoke volumes. Not only was he peaceful, man, that's freedom. That is freedom. Whew. It says, we're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality.
It doesn't say that we were in a place of neutrality, guys. Follow this along, that we were placed there because of all these series of prayers, observations, and lists that we've made. You with us? You did this work, and guess what? Here's what you're getting. These are some more promises. Mm. Pretty cool promises, huh?
This is huge. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed.
It's about the fifth time he said that in this one little paragraph.
Yeah. Alcoholism does not exist for us. The problem of alcohol, being a slave to alcohol, being driven and told what to do by alcohol, it has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. This is how we react so long as we what? Keep in fit spiritual condition.
There's the caveat. This is what happens if you just stay connected to God as you understand God. But it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels. Your laurels are what? Your past accomplishments. Mm-hmm. We were talking about it last night. I was standing yesterday at some point, there was five of us standing in a circle out here in the pool room, and we looked at each other, and there was 100 years between us. John, where you at? Wasn't it about 100 years?
Yes, sir.
And the question was posed, can anybody in this circle stay sober today on the first step they did 20 years ago? And everybody said, no. That's a laurel. I accomplished that 21 years ago. But I guarantee you, dudes, that ain't happened. It is not strong enough to keep me sober today.
No.
I got to keep doing this deal. The book Christian just read, it says it's a lifetime matter. Yay. I get to hang out with God for the rest of these days. Come on, baby, let's go.
Now, Larry brings up a good point. Raises the question. What about semi-annual house cleaning? What about this? What about that? How am I supposed to do this? The ideal is, once I've done a fourth step, ideal, nobody's going to measure up to that, is that I won't have to go and do another fourth step if I do 10 step every day. If I continue to sweep off my side of the street every day, nothing will build up on my side out of a self-will trying to run the show. I've actually had 10th steps that came up that in the course of a guy talking to me about his 10th step, it triggered a fourth step thing that was never on his list that God just brought to mind, and it was a doozy. He hadn't thought about it in years, but as he was sharing about this 10th step, and he goes, hold on a second. And he just poured his heart out, and I was like, wow. Let's meet for coffee real quick. You know, and I sat down with him, we had coffee, and we talked about that thing. But it's, man, we've invited the creator, the power of the universe. He can keep Saturn on its axis. He can breathe life into me. Do you think he might be interested in me walking this world hand in hand with him, enjoying the freedoms he provides, enjoying the grace he extols? Do I really believe that? As I do more and more of this work, yes, I do. I really believe. His old sponsor used to say it good. I want all the goodies. All the goodies. Not just freedom from alcohol. I want the goodies.
Somebody said to him one time, he said, you play favorites. He says, I damn sure do. The guy sponsored 27 men. He says, I do. I do play favorites. He says, I love them. He says, my favorites are the ones that want it all. Because guess what those guys are doing? Mm. They're on the front lines. They're in the trenches.
Yeah.
They're in Oregon watching it snow. Because I'm going to guarantee you, baby, bring it all. I want it all.
Yeah.
And I don't care where I got to go to get it. And where I get it is from looking at you.
Yeah.
You give me all the gifts that a man could ever desire.
Yeah.
Anyway, so much for the fluff. We're headed for trouble if we do, because alcohol's a subtle foe. It's sitting there waiting. It's waiting. It's waiting. It's waiting until I say, you know what? A little sip would take this edge off.
You know, it's funny, Larry and I have very different opinions about things. For me, if you had told me that the freedom from alcohol was going to be the most I could ever hope for, I may have signed on wholeheartedly. But when I saw people show up and wave that credit card, they get that back, or show a picture of their kids that they just got back, that fluff, that's the meat and potatoes of this thing, man.
Yeah, baby.
That's the stuff that keeps me coming back from war. And you know what? We get a little over the top about this, and people say, you know what? This is not a pep rally. And I said,
really?
This is a pep rally. Because I watch a guy get up there and pick up a white chip and hold it up and go, if you want what we have, I'm going to sit down. Hell, I don't want what you have. Get up there and show some excitement. Is God working in your life or not? Are you excited about life? Has your life taken on new meaning? Have you had something so profound that has grabbed you and taken you out of everything you've ever known into a life that's better than... Wow, it's like sounds like what Ebby was sharing with Bill. He had been taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Is that possible? Can it get gooder and gooder and gooder? Can it get better than anything I've ever known? Blow my mind, God. And he has. He has. So when people sit there and say that that's not possible, I'm here to tell you, it is possible. I'm up here in Oregon with a bunch of men who are in the deal, living life. It's in session. I was traipsing around on the coast of Bermuda less than a year and a half ago with my fiance on a paid trip from my company because in a job I'm not supposed to have, in a field I never would have picked, doing things I never would have thought. Wow. Am I going to cut out the power of God now? Hell no. I think it gets gooder and gooder and gooder. You know? And that's a good old Southern regional colloquialism right there. Gooder and gooder and gooder.
We got a bunch of prayers coming up, boys.
All right. It says, easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on the laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do. Alcohol's a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism.
Huh.
What we really have is a daily reprieve. Contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition.
What day do we have to carry this message or this vision?
It gives us a time frame. Every day.
Huh.
It's every day is the day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Prayer.
That's right.
How can I best serve thee, God? Thy will, not mine, be done. says, these are then thoughts which must go with us constantly. I can exercise my willpower along this line, all I wish.
All this time, they've taken our will away. We're on page 85. And it said, they've taken our will away, and now they're giving it back. They're saying, you can exercise your will along this line all you wish.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the proper use of the will.
The catch is along this line.
Yeah.
Along a selfless line. Then it goes on to say, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If I have carefully followed directions, I have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, I have become God conscious. That sense the flow of his spirit was real big when my first sponsor, Don, was telling me about spiritual cholesterol. Because, see, my mom was in the hospital, and Emory Hospital had her kidney removed because of arterial sclerosis. I had a urologist give me everything I ever wanted to know about arterial sclerosis, hardening the arteries, and how that had cut off the blood flow in her renal artery, and she lost her kidney and almost died. Everything I wanted and never wanted to know. He showed me pictures and diagrams and stuff. I'm thinking, whoa. And I show up at the Triangle Club downtown Atlanta, and Don goes, what you got is spiritual cholesterol. That makes sense. You know? I had a visual. In my head, I had this vision that it can't flow through me because of this crap that I've built up in me. I can't feel the sense of his presence in me. So what these steps do is clear away that spiritual cholesterol and allow the sense of his presence to flow through me. But I can block it anytime I want to out of selfish and self-centered motives, thinking, and actions. I cut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit is just like putting a blockage in my arteries. It says, I begin to sense the flow of his Spirit into me. To some extent, I have become God conscious.
To some extent.
Yeah.
They got kind of a caveat on that.
Yeah. I like having a sponsor. I usually filter my God consciousness through him and sometimes through Bob Crawford, just to make sure it's God and not me. I have begun to sense, develop this vital sixth sense.
We're going to talk more about the sixth sense in a couple of pages.
But the book says I must go further. It means more action.
Vital sixth sense means it's life-sustaining once again. That's step 10. There was nothing in there about nighttime lists, was there? Did I miss it? It's 5-2.
Okay.
You want to do a break? You want to take 5 minutes and come back, and let's do it at 9 o'clock, straight up. We're going to wrap it up here in about, we got about another hour or so, and we're done. All right, guys, where were you at?
Bottom of page 85.
85?
Yeah.
Bottom page 85.
Yeah, we are back in, I think it was in Savannah or Hilton Head. We actually had some lady come up and ask us, where does step 11 start? And I said, well, actually, bottom of page 85 says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. Blew our minds. You know, it's funny. It was in there in black and white. I didn't see a lot of this stuff until I read it. I'm not suggesting that she didn't read it or nothing. I'm simply suggesting that sometimes, because I don't... Anybody in here been taking highlights and writing stuff and have some time behind them? And did you find some stuff that you didn't see before? I know. It put it right there in front of us. You couldn't see it. I look over at his book sometimes, and he'll look over at my book, and we'll swap looks just to see if we're highlighting and underlining the same thing. He'll look at me going, I'll be damned. That wasn't in there a week ago. Where did the... It just wasn't. It blows my mind. But step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. It's the only suggestion they got. It says we shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. Prayer works. Meditation works. If I have the proper attitude and I work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions.
All right. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous says we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When I first got here, I turned into a seeker. Jehovah's Witnesses. I'd open up the door and stood, and I was dressed. I used to open the door naked. I opened the door and I said, "Come in. I want to know what you're talking about. I've always slammed the door or hidden from you guys. What are you guys selling here?" And I listened to them. Mormons, come on in. Got some fresh cookies. What you got? And they left me their book, you know, Book of Mormon. And I gave them my little book, Came to Believe. And I said, you guys come back in a couple of days. And I was talking. They did. I swear to God, this happened. Came back and we watched the NCAA finals and drank sweet iced tea and ate cookies. Talked about the Book of Mormon. Talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm seeking. So I go over and I'm meeting in the belly of an Episcopal church with an old timer in Atlanta called Po' Boy Rice and Raleigh Hill and that bunch. And Father Comer was the minister there, or the priest. And I was down in the kitchen one Tuesday making coffee, and Father Comer came down and we started chatting. And I said, tell me about this Episcopal deal. He says, why don't you come over and visit with me? So I set up some appointments, and I sat down with Father Comer. And I listened to his spin on what the Episcopal faith teaches. He gave me books, and I read. And I kept seeking. I ended up over at the Unity Church, and that's where I landed. That's where I set down my roots. Because what I found there was something that I could live with that was palatable for me, and it lined right up with Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my truth, okay? Through, huh? Good. So what I did there in my learning, my teaching, my following, my seeking, I ran across a teaching by a guy by the name of Jack Boland. Jack Boland is a recovered Unity minister out of Missouri, Unity Village out there. And what Jack did is he took the 12 steps that we use, and he condensed them down to 8. And he came up with a thing that he called the mastermind prayer. And that prayer suggests that you get a prayer partner and you do this exercise on a routine basis. And it gives you some guidelines or some suggestions. And so 17 years ago, I had a prayer partner. His name was Greg McClellan that I sponsored. And Greg and I wrote this open that was suggested, gives a guideline, and a close. And for 17 years, I've been using this prayer guideline. This is my prayer partner. Every Thursday night at 7:30, before We Are Not a Glum Lot, our home group, we wander into a small room in the belly of this church. We grab each other's hands. Sometimes it's just he and I, and sometimes it's other men that join us. And we pray. Now, this is my prayer life. I'm not suggesting this for you. I'm offering to you what I do. The book says we, the fellowship, can offer some definite and valuable suggestions. This is so valuable to me. It's the most life-transforming thing that I've been a part of in my 21 years outside AA. Okay? Now, you got my email address. If you want a copy of this, be glad to shoot it to you. Six of us huddled up over in the chapel last night, and we shared this prayer exercise. Pretty cool deal. I'm going to read it to you. And if you want to know more, see me after this, and we'll go into detail with it. The open says, God, we admit that we are powerless to solve our problems and to improve our lives. We need your help. We've come to believe that you can change our lives. We realize that self-defeating thinking is the cause of our problems, unhappiness, fears and failures. We are ready to have our beliefs and attitudes changed and our lives may be transformed. We have made a decision to surrender our will and life to you and ask to be changed. We forgive ourselves for all our mistakes and shortcomings. We also forgive all persons, places, and institutions that may have caused us harm. And at this point, we go around the prayer circle and everybody puts out their request. Then at the close, Christian reads this part.
We give thanks that you are responding to our needs, and we assume the same feelings we would have if our requests were fulfilled. We now have a covenant in which it is agreed that you are supplying us with an abundance of all things necessary to live a successful and happy life. We dedicate ourselves to be of maximum service to you and to those around us, to live in a manner that sets the highest example for others to follow, and to remain responsive to your guidance. We go forth with a spirit of enthusiasm, excitement, and expectancy. We are at peace.
If you're interested in this, email me. I'll shoot you a copy of it. So, and I would also suggest doing, you know, kind of, I covered it. Look around. I mean, religious people have good ideas.
Yeah. AA came from religious people.
Yeah. There's a guy.
It's a great idea.
I was approached outside a while ago. We kept talking about this walking around step, this tenth step. And somebody said to me, well, I write this stuff down at night. Well, what does it say here, Christian?
Book says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day.
Huh. This is what, 11?
Constructively. Not destructively. I don't beat myself up anymore. I don't tear myself down. I ask myself some honest questions, though. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Even if I did a tenth step, did these things pop up today? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Am I dragging today's BS into tomorrow? Or should I leave it here and today? Was I kind and loving towards all? What could I have done better? These are just questions I can ask myself. Some people have a little format that they write it out on. They ask themselves these individual questions. They write it down. What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? But I must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that diminishes my usefulness to others.
Wait a minute. It diminishes what?
Says my diminishes my usefulness to others.
Oh, so I fit myself to be of maximum service to God and my kids.
This is a tough discipline right here. This 11-step discipline is tough. Because my 11-step that I thought, and then I read the book and it messed me up, I thought 11-step was hitting my knees and praying. 11-step is a disciplined walk with God. I discipline myself, like this book is suggesting, to walk closer to Him. I fit myself. And I can't do that unless I correct those behaviors as they crop up and look at them and be able to see them. It says, after making my review, prayer, ask God His forgiveness, and I inquire, meditation, what corrective measures should be taken. And then I sit there and I listen for the answers to the questions I just asked myself. And guess what? I get answers. But I got to stop, shut up, and listen long enough to hear them. This is a real noisy place up here. It's a lot of confusion and frustration, and there's a voices in here that just scream. You know, I've been talking to a number of people here this weekend, and I ended up buying the set because I got to check it out. Scott Lee apparently did a guided meditation. I really want to check this out because I've had 7 people pull me aside and tell me about it. I only needed 1 person to tell me about a good bar, so I got 7 people telling me about this hookup, and I'm going to check it out on the way back. But guess what? The easiest one I've ever got was the Earl Hightower one I heard. It was the 1-2-3-4. 1-2-3-4. Breathe in on 1, out through 2. Breathe in through 3 and out through 4. And that helped me out a lot. That's helped me for over 4 years. And it's a real simple meditation. And the idea I have up here, my ego tells me that I'm going to be walking with God. That's my ego, man. The reality is I get to glimpse God. I get to sense His presence. I get to feel God. And if they'll get these moments where I get to walk with them. But I have yet to be able to stay completely focused and entranced with God. But I get to take His hand, and then I let it go. And I get to take it back, and then I let it go.
This next piece we're going into, it says, on awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. I also have an 11th step. It's called the 11th step morning prayer. Be glad to email that to you as well. And it basically encompasses everything we're about to read in a prayer format.
On awakening, like eyes open, let us think about the 24 hours ahead.
My sponsor has got me, he's had me doing an exercise for almost 2 years now. As soon as I open my eyes, the very first thing I do is say, good morning, God, what can I do for you today? I'm hooked up right out of the gate. But I don't get up and go pee. I don't get up and go make coffee. I open my eyes and I say, good morning, God. What can I do for you today? May sound simple, but if you think about it, you're hooked up. You ain't got time to let this thing start chewing on you.
And I like the way he words it here. We consider our plans for the day. Remember, I'm no longer running the show. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. I'm practicing this way of life as I move forward. So I consider. I have a schedule that shows what I want to happen. How do you make God laugh? Plans. So I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, I ask what? Prayer, God, to direct my thinking. I especially ask that I be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives.
Boy, that's cool.
Man. See, I, I'm, I was never good at math in high school, but I do a lot of math as a, for a job. And somebody suggested to me a really easy equation. They said, Christian, U plus problem equals disaster. And I looked through my life. My truth was, every time I encountered a problem, left to my own devices, it blew up. But he suggested a new solution. They said, U plus God plus problem equals solution. So I include God in all my decision making. I include God in all my waking hours. I can leave him. I brought him with me downstairs from the room today. I did not bring him downstairs from the room the other night. The sense of his presence wasn't with me. I felt me and all me and ego, and it was there. But I can do that anytime I want. You know, I like the way Keith Lewis says, hey, God, I'm going to go play baseball. You want to come with me? Wow. We can regain that innocence of our youth in that. I can take him with me. I get to look forward to taking him with me. How cool is that? I consider my plans for the day. So two more lines down says, under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance because, after all, God gave me a brain to use. My thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when I'm thinking of, when my thinking is cleared of these wrong motives. Here's the fun stuff. In thinking about my day, I may face indecision. I may not be able to determine which course to take. Prayer. I ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. And I relax. I take it easy.
Don't force it.
But don't struggle. I'm often surprised how the right answers come, time frame, after I have tried this for a while. I don't know how long a while is.
And we talked about that vital sixth sense. Here it is.
What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind.
You know what you're supposed to do. It just comes to you.
Yeah.
Because what you've done is you're aligning your will with God's. Your little plans and designs and these foolish decisions that you're making are no longer the guiding forces of your life. But if this is the big if, you follow directions.
Mm. It says, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times.
So you've just begun this walk. It's like you plant the seeds. You can't go out tomorrow and start picking tomatoes. You got to wait till they sprout. You know what I'm saying? It
says, I might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. You know, you'll get that phone call from the guy, and it'll be like, I'm in love. Really? What's your last name? Oh, man, you don't understand. It's different. Really? Yeah, how'd you know? Oh, I knew the minute she walked out of detox. It's just, God. Really? You think God brought her to you, huh? Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I have a sponsor and a network of men that I reach out to and filter my God consciousness through because they recognize me and they can pick up on the me parts real easy. Nevertheless, I find my thinking will, again, time frame, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. I come to rely upon it. The book suggests that we conclude the period of meditation with a prayer. And this is a real neat prayer. Here's the prayer: that I be shown throughout the day what my next step is to be. That I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. I ask especially for freedom from self-will. I'm careful to make no requests for myself only. I may ask for myself, however, if others are going to be helped. And I'm careful never to pray for my own selfish ends.
There's a guy back in Atlanta.
He's in the Northeast now. He's up in New Hampshire.
Yeah, he's in New Hampshire now. But he was from Atlanta. His name was Paul Hill. Paul was kind of like, he looked like a skinhead. All inked up. Wore black high-top tennis shoes. You know the guy. And he'd lost it all. He was bagging groceries and stocking shelves at a grocery store, riding a bicycle to work, living in the basement of his dad's house. And I'm working with him, and everywhere he goes, he's got that big print big book. Carries it with him everywhere he goes. He's a thumper. He came to me one day, and he says, Larry, he says, it's my license are coming up for reinstatement. I said, well, let's talk about your plan of action. He says, well, I got outstanding deals in three counties. I said, okay, what are the requirements? He said, I got to get one of those breathing machines to crank my car. He said, that's going to be X number of dollars. He says, it's required that I go to a DUI school and get a certificate That's going to be X number of dollars. I said, do you have the money? He said, yeah. I said, okay. First thing you want to do then is go down to Confederate Avenue. Confederate Avenue is the Department of Motor Vehicles or Driver's License Bureau, whatever. It's a big place down there. And talk.